Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comic, 2000 AD. I'm Eamon Clark, and it's a returning guest this time from all the way back on episode 11. Glenn Lees comes back from the land down under. How are you, Glenn?
I'm going very well, Eamon. It was that long ago, was it?
Well, I was just looking on our Skype chat. It's just over a year since we've recorded, yeah. But it's great to have you back in the book club. So we did 2000 AD origin stories, obviously. So we turned to recent acquisitions. What's been lighting the fires for you in the world of 2000 AD recently?
Well, other than the weekly prog and monthly magazine, I've still been getting the Judge Dredd Mega Collection, which is coming out here in Australia. We're probably a bit behind you guys in England who are getting it. I think we're up to about the 56th issue now, so I don't know where you guys are up to, but it's a little bit ahead of us, I think. Might be like 6 months or so.
Right. And, of course, that was originally, I think, was 80 volumes, and it's now, has it been extended to 90, is that right?
Yeah, word is it's extended to 90, and then they've announced the 2000 AD version of it as well. So I think I will go down the rabbit hole with that one, even though it is collecting a lot of stuff that I've already got. But I do like the format, and I think it looks very nice on the shelf and the quality of it's very good.
Okay, yeah, I mean, they're excellent, lovely hardback volumes, and if you've got the shelf space, they do look rather sensational on there. Although, as you say, there is always the thing that we're double or triple dipping on some of this stuff.
Quadruple dipping. But, the Boo Cook spine for the 2000 AD one looks pretty spectacular, and I think I will lash out and pay the extra for the figurines that it's going to come with as well. But there is no confirmation of it coming to Australia yet. I've checked with the magazine service that gets it down here, all those sort of collections, but they don't really know at this stage. But I'd say it's pretty sure they will, because I know quite a few people get the Judge Dredd one down here, so it's a bit of a no-brainer.
Great stuff.
Yeah, the other thing I've picked up off eBay recently, inspired by listening to the book club podcast where the quality of the Titan reprints is sort of mentioned quite a bit, I've sort of been tracking down different titles. I started off on a bit of an Alan Moore sort of a run, so I got book one of Halo Jones and DR and Quinch, and he's through the two Future Shocks titles that they put out as well. So, and then recently I tracked down a bulk lot of 42 of the Judge Dredd, so Judge Dredd Chronicles, I think they were called. So there's all the different, yes, Judge Dredd sort of Judge Dredd 1 to 27, and then within that they've got the Cursed Earth and Judge Child Quest and Judge Death and Blockmania, Apocalypse War. So the reading pile's gotten very, very high. I haven't had a chance to go through them yet. I've been sort of doing stuff at work and privately that I haven't done as much reading as I like lately, but I just thought, yeah, I'll grab those while I can, because they're an investment in my future.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, I mean, you've got quite a reading pile there by the sounds of it, but those Titan books were lovely.
Yeah. I had two of the Judge Dredd ones, so I'll pass them on to someone who's chasing them, I guess. But yeah, the whole lot. I think that's the complete run. I'm not sure. It's hard to sort of find. There seems to be some say there was 44 books, and some say there was 48 books. But when I look at it, the last book is Judge Dredd 27, and that's what I've got. So.
Right, but you must be getting near to the full collection.
Yeah, they seem to be doing them numerically, majority of them, because a lot of the mega epics were sort of, I think the last one they did was Oz, there's like two books or three books or whatever it was, so yeah. And the final thing I've got, which is also on the reading pile, is Be Pure, Be Vigilant, Behave by Pat Mills. I think that's something I'm really looking forward to reading, but I think I'll sort of set some time aside for that one, because I'll be very interested to see Pat's no-holds-barred history of 2000 AD. I think, is it based, have you read that one or not? or
yes, I have read that one. Yes, was that, it is as you say.
Was that like, because I remember reading on his blog, and he had sort of some stuff on his blog with the early 2000 AD sort of history and stuff. Did he incorporate that into this book, or is it all original sort of stuff?
No, I think he has incorporated those blog posts and he's expanded upon them.
Because I really enjoyed those blog posts. So I can't wait to get into that. I'm halfway through Serial Killer, which I sort of have, you know, got halfway through, and I've sort of haven't had a chance to sort of get back into. So I want to finish Serial Killer, which is his sort of prose sort of one that he did with Kevin O'Neill, and then I'll move straight into Be Pure, Be Vigilant, Behave. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, excellent stuff. As you say, your reading pile is probably as big as my pile for Mega City Book Club. So. an embarrassment of riches. It's a nice thing to have.
Oh, it is. It's good just to revisit like all this stuff and just take it all in again.
Great stuff. So last time, Glenn, you kicked us off with the sort of the voyage. We're going backwards through Chopper's timeline. We did Song of the Surfer, and of course since then Terry Mack, your countryman, has come back and done Oz. And next week, in fact, I'm going to be recording about the Midnight Surfer. So that was last time. What's the book you've brought for the book club this time?
The book is The Fiends of the Eastern Front, which is a nice little short story from 1980, and featuring the writing talent of Jerry Finlay Day and the great King Carlos on art.
Yes, and it is it's a splendidly sort of self-contained story. 10 episodes, so it's progs 152 to 161. And as you say, Jerry Finlay Day, Carlos Oscura, letters Jack Potter, and Steve McManus was the commissioning editor. So tell us, why have you picked Fiends of the Eastern Front for the book club this time?
It's just one of my favourite stories from 2000 AD. It's something that I wasn't reading at the time, so it was something that I saw. Initially, I saw it in the 2000 AD Winners Special number 2. There was a feature, and it was the Galaxy's Greatest Compact Characters A to Z, and they had sort of all these things, and that was around a year into me reading the prog. So at the time it was sort of a lot of stuff that I'd never really seen in this A to Z, and I just remember being sort of, it piqued my interest seeing this vampire war story, and it was something that was pretty hard to track down back then. Like it had never been reprinted, and I was sort of going back and collecting best of 2000 ADs and stuff like that, but it hadn't been put in that, and it didn't actually appear there until about 1993, I think, when I was looking around at this. And then they reprinted it again with the magazine back when it was number 201 sort of thing, so that was quite a few years ago as well. But it never sort of turned up, and it just looked something very interesting for 2000 AD because of its weird concept.
Okay, so we'll do version control. I think we've both, as we discussed before we started recording, we've both got the hardback collection from 2006, slightly large format, almost prog sized.
Yeah, and a very nice reproduction of the art on the glossy paper and everything. My copy I actually got from eBay secondhand because it's now out of print, obviously, and it's from Bournemouth Libraries. So I don't know whether they didn't keep it on the shelf or someone took it and then they decided to move it on. But it's still in very good nick, and the quality is really, really good, the reproduction. So it's a nice volume.
So Bournemouth loss is your gain. Lovely cover by Carlos Oscura, obviously. Nice introduction to this volume by Dan Abnett, who points out you know, he was reading the Prog at the time when this came out, and he points out that it was a slightly unusual story for the Prog, but at the same time one that captivated readers at the time, and has sort of stuck over the years, I think.
Yeah, he mentions that he didn't like it much, which is quite interesting at the time, and that he makes a bit of an error where he says that he knew Jerry Finley Day's work from the VCs and Rogue Trooper, but of course Rogue Trooper hadn't appeared yet in the Prog. It was still another over a year away, but yeah, the VCs were definitely in the Prog then, written by Jerry, and a different style of war in that one, the Future War. So
okay, so let's do the sort of brief synopsis of what Fiends of the Eastern Front is about for anybody who hasn't yet encountered it. We won't spoil the ending, but tell us what's the setup.
Okay, so the story starts in contemporary times, Berlin of 1980, and there's an inspector and a colonel from the army, from the British army. They've found some remains in a construction site, and there's a German soldier clutching a journal, and it tells the story of this dark tale of vampires and death and things at the end of World War II. So yeah, it outlines how initially when this German soldier joins the fight, they've got these Romanian,
the Allies, I suppose.
They're allied with the Romanians, and then they're fighting on the Russian front, and then suddenly they switch sides, and he knows the secret of the Romanians, and so he the rest of his sort of war is trying to stay ahead of them and not get killed by them. So
yeah, I mean, it's a great, you know, setup. I particularly like the first episode, which tells us everything we need to know in five pages of glorious Carlos art. Because, as you say, we flash back straight away from 1980 to 1941, and this German, I guess he's a private, Hans Schmidt, you know, almost the John Smith of the sort of the story. And I thought it was very interesting that they've chosen a German soldier as the protagonist. And as you say, they encounter their Romanian allies, but of course there's far more to them than meets the eye, which is what the story is going to be about. And of course they're fighting the Russians, so it's I suppose it's slightly easier to have a German protagonist when they're fighting Russians and not fighting English or American troops.
I guess it also adds an element of mystique for a young British boy reading a prog, that it's, you know, it's over there, it's, you know, it's a mysterious place, Germany in the war and that. So I guess, you know, it sort of makes sense as well to sort of give it that air of mystery of what could be going on in World War II Germany, rather than, you know, following a British soldier. I guess it probably just adds that element of, yeah, mystique, and who was going, who when they were fighting on either side, sort of thing. I guess, it's a very dark story, and it switches from one thing to the other of. With Hans sort of discovering who these Romanians are, and then when it all flips and they switch sides, it's essentially trying to escape and survive these people that he knows what they're capable of, and it's pretty horrific.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose we should mention that the Romanian forces are led by their captain, or Hauptmann Costanza is the leader of the Romanian troops. And as you say, yes, they begin the story, they're allies of the German army fighting the Russian. They keep meeting Captain Costanza and his corporal Kringu,
who seems to... he does the dirty work during the daytime because the vampires can't come out until night. So, yeah, he makes sure that the coffins are well secured and no one sees what's going on.
Yeah, and, you know, as you say, I mean, the fiends of the Eastern Front are, in fact, as you say, vampires. So we've got coffins, we've got their, you know, their sort of human assistant, Kringu, transports the coffins during the day. And you mentioned it's a dark strip. One of the things they do, because it's the Eastern Front and it's they're moving sort of east and northwards, they get to what Dan Abnett calls in the introduction almost perpetual night, which of course for a vampire story is a perfect setting, and it lets the vampires come out nearly all the time. But yeah, it, you know, a lot of the story takes place obviously in the dark. Terrifically atmospheric stuff, I thought, by both Jerry Finlay Day and obviously King Carlos.
Yeah, there's a lot of the pictures of the vampires at the start where they're almost just shadows. They don't even have like a definitive shape sort of thing. They're just sort of there in the dark until Hans really discovers who they are and what they're capable of.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the third page of the first episode, where Hans Schmidt has been caught up in barbed wire. He's pinned down by Russian troops. He's about to die, basically. And then, as you say, we've got dark night, we've got wind, we've got these sinister shapes appearing out of the darkness to overwhelm the Russian troops.
It's swirling. The artwork is swirling where they appear. Like he's conveyed the, you can see the movement of the cloaks with the wind, and you can almost see the wind, the way he sort of has done the line work, and yeah, these things just appearing out of nowhere, and the Russians actually saying, where did they come from?
It's a great page. It's, you know, it tells you everything you need to know. It's a page I think we're going to be coming back to talking about towards the end of our discussion. But yeah,
yes,
it's such, you know, such a brilliant introduction. It almost tells us just exactly what's going on. But of course, Schmidt has to sort of learn slowly, bit by bit, more about them. I love the fact that the Romanians have got their badge caps and the sort of insignia on the their truck, which is a bat.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's great stuff. And at various points, I think people write Russian words for devil on various bits of equipment.
On the trees.
On the trees,
and
the yeah.
Yeah, and leaving garlic and crosses and...
And you know, you mentioned already, so like we begin with our German protagonist and the fact that these Romanian vampires are on their side, but as the story progresses there's a change, which I think reflects true history, when, you know, the Romanians basically switch sides, at which point Hans Schmidt and his friend Karl realize that they've gone from being allies to being actually, you know, hunted themselves. And a lot of the second part of the story is about them trying to either escape the vampires or hunt down and destroy the vampires.
Or wipe them out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is such a great quick story to read. Like you say, the first chapter's 5 pages, and I think there might be another 1 5-pager in it and a 4.5-pager, but every other episode's 4 pages. And so you can just read through it. There's a lot packed in there, but you can read through it so quickly. And I think that's one of the things I like about it as well, because there's just no fat on it. It's just all action and story and yeah, things happening every episode.
And yes, I mean, you know, Jerry Finlay Day packs in a lot of stuff. We've got, you know, fighter planes. We've got
horses, the Cossacks on horses.
Yeah.
We've got a ski chase, we've got tanks,
wolves, paratroops.
Yeah, it's,
you know, every aspect of a war story.
Every theater of war. Yeah.
And of course, Jerry Finley Day, you know, famous for doing all those sort of war stories, I think during the 70s in Battle and so on, and Warlord. And of course, as you've mentioned already, he did a neat line in War Stories for 2000 AD. He did a lot of Invasion, which we've just been talking about recently on the podcast. But obviously, as you've mentioned, the VCs is from about the same time period as this story. And then a year or so later, he'd do Rogue Trooper.
Yeah, so he had a real pedigree for war and doing these nice stories that would could work as single episodes like he did for sort of VCs and Rogue Trooper or something like this, where he just has like a nice 10-parter.
Yeah, and I think this is one story that pretty much from what I've read came to him. It's his own creation. This wasn't one that came from sort of like the think tank at 2000 AD. I'm pretty sure this is entirely Jerry Finley Day's. You know, he came up with the whole story and idea himself, sold it to Steve McManus, and they were away. And I guess the only thing that Steve had to do was to find who to pair him up with artistically. And of course, again, talking about that legacy of 70s war comics, Carlos had done several of those as well, like Major Easy, and I think he did the Rat Pack as well, possibly. If you're going to pick an artist for this sort of stuff, you couldn't really do better than Carlos Ascara at the time, could you?
Yeah, and the thing with Carlos at this time, obviously, is he wasn't working on Judge Dredd. He was doing Strontium Dog and Stainless Steel Rat, and he did those few episodes of the ABC Warriors. But it's not until he gets into the Apocalypse War that he does a major run on Judge Dredd and returns to the character after, you know, 4 or 5 years of sort of not doing it because he didn't like what happened with Mike McMahon sort of taking his art and sort of running with it and copying his style to a degree in those early dreads before Mike McMahon sort of developed his own style. So yeah, it's kind of interesting that you'd get someone like Carlos on this story because, you know, he's obviously just working on different stories until he becomes the Dread and Strontium Dog artist that probably dominates his art for the next couple of decades.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, and of course, I think, you know, at this time he was living in England. He was living in Croydon, Carlos, you know, even then he was well known, I guess, for being able to turn this stuff out quickly. You know, if you wanted somebody for a weekly strip.
Yeah, but you can just there's no lack of detail there. It's just, you know, like. If he is doing it quickly, which his art always does have that sort of element of a looseness and a quickness to it, but it's always fully rendered. You know, there's never like a half, doesn't look like a half effort sort of thing. So
yeah, and it's brilliant stuff. Yeah. And as we've said, there's an awful lot of dark, there's an awful lot of night action, obviously, with a vampire story. And yet, as you say, the panels are terrifically detailed. You're always, I find with Carlos, you always know exactly what's going on. You know exactly where you are in the action. He handles horses and tanks and planes and paratroopers. But, you know exactly, I think, what's going on, where Hans Schmidt is, where the vampires are. Terrific stuff throughout. The way he, you know, delivers these four pages for each episode.
Yeah, like you look at the page breakdowns, and quite often there's sort of a good sort of one, two, three, four, five, six, seven or eight panels, but it doesn't look too overdone. Like it's just there's a lot going on there, the tanks. You look at the tanks, and it gives me that okay, that's a a precursor, yes, to the Apocalypse War tanks in in a couple of years' time with the Russian sort of style of tank.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I do like this particular hardback that we're both looking at because it is pretty much, as I say, I think we're looking more or less at the same size page as the prog. So the artwork just looks fabulous. It's on nice paper. It's a brilliant hardback collection, which, as you say, sadly is now out of print.
But you can get them from Bournemouth.
Bournemouth Library, yes. Yes, how it managed to find its way out of Bournemouth Library into your hands. But there you go. That's a story. I mean, I did, you know, I'll go back to the point again. I did like the fact that this is a story told from a German soldier's point of view, which I still think was a novel thing to do. I know there was a story from the 70s. Is it? I think it was called Hellman from Hammerfall.
Yeah, yep.
Which was either, I think that was...
Was that in Action?
I think it was... I can't remember if it was in Action or Battle, but it's one of
those... I've got a feeling, wasn't it one of Pat Mill's sort of ideas to have this, yeah, this German soldier in Action? But maybe I'm misthinking it. Yeah, misremembering.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was in Action, and it probably was a Pat Mills idea, and he probably handed it to John Wagner, I should imagine, or possibly Jerry Finch.
Yeah, well,
we'll have to check.
Particularly
on that.
In those days, I think that was one of the things, was because there was a lot of World War II veterans in the old boys sort of comics world that Pat describes at that time in like various interviews and that. So yeah, like. I'm pretty sure that that's why it was in Action, was because of Pat trying to, you know, go put something against the establishment that sort of wasn't in the norm, sort of thing. So, yeah.
Yes, going against the accepted norm. I've just checked while we've been talking about it. It was, as you're quite right, it was in Action, and it was, in fact, written by Jerry Finley Day and drawn by Mike Burry.
Ah, there you go.
So, yeah. Great stuff. So yes, as you say, Pat Mills setting them off with a anti-establishment type story about, you know, a German soldier who's not portrayed in the normal stereotypical fashion of sort of boys comics of the time.
Die England or die.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, and here again we get Hans Schmidt and later on his friend Karl, who are very sympathetic characters. You know, they are just ordinary blokes trying to survive in a terrible environment, which is made, of course, even, you know, ramp up the stakes, literally, you know, no pun intended, by having vampires. You know, what a marvellous self-contained story, really, for these 10 episodes of the prog, which obviously Jerry Finley Day intended as just like a complete story, you know, a beginning, a middle and an end. And very sort of like neatly done, I think.
I think that's one of the things I appreciate about it, is because it is just nicely self-contained. And you sort of think about it, back in those days, it probably was a cardinal sin of a writer to come up with a concept and not give himself a paycheck or like a story that he could just keep churning out for as many years as he could, sort of thing. So...
Yeah, you'd think they'd want, you know, he'd think, I want a continuing story that's going to go run and run and run. But he comes up with this neatly, you know, one and done story of 10 episodes. And, you know, there it is, brilliantly delivered. It's like a perfect little horror jewel from the early days of 2000 AD.
Yeah, it's just so different to everything going on in the comic at that time. I was looking at Barney, the you know, the 2000 AD sort of repository on the internet, to see, well, what was in the prog at this time to go up against the Fiends of the Eastern Front. And we've got Black Hawk,
right,
we've got the Judge Child Quest had started around the same time, we've got Fiends of the Eastern Front, and Day of the Droids, the Robo Hunter story, and the VC. So we've sort of there's quite a few sort of longer sort of tales going on there. So maybe the thought was to have this shorter self-contained story to sort of balance out against, you know, Black Hawk and the longer sort of Robo Hunter stories and all that sort of stuff, because they were stories that went for nearly half a year or more. I think Black Hawk, it says it went for 34 episodes. So I guess, yeah, it was quite a different concept to sort of put in there, this sort of shorter story, other than like the one and done Future Shocks and things like that were obviously going on probably at the same time as well.
Yeah, I mean, interesting stuff, as you say. I guess it gave Steve McManus, you know, you think there's 10 weeks that I can cross off in the diary. I've got something for that.
That's right, yeah.
I'm looking at the sort of later episodes where they very neatly start each first page with like we're back in 1980, so we get one panel of the general and the inspector reading the diary of Hans Schmidt, with a little introductory text box that tells us, you know, a skeleton was found clutching a diary that told one of the most sinister tales of World War II, the story of Romanian vampires. And I did like that at the start of each episode, just like a quick fill in. We're in 1980 and then we jump back to the action, which switches, or it moves on, because it starts in 1941, but there's obviously a sort of
a fast gap. Forward, yeah,
it fast forwards to 45. There's been a long period when Schmidt has been on the basically both trying to evade capture by the vampires but also trying to track them down and pick them off, leading up to the 1945 conclusion of the story. So yeah, terrific stuff. Those later episodes, I think, you know, it's very well done, particularly as we get to see the skeleton, we get some bat symbols, and of course we get to see Costanza, this great villain, becoming more and more the dark vampire lord, and Carlos's artwork reflecting that, I think, more and more.
Yeah, and then we also get, they're not zombies, they're vampires. They're poor old Hans, he's walking into American camps to surrender, and he gets in there and the soldiers are all dead. They've been taken over by Costanza and his vampires sort of thing. So yeah, it sort of continues to get worse and worse.
Yeah, I know. Of course, we haven't. You know, you mentioned vampires. We have to mention Dracula. I did wonder whether this was almost 2000 AD's take on the Dracula story, whether Costanza could have been Dracula himself. There's quite a neat sort of in joke at the very start, before they sort of sign up. Hans Schmidt and his friend have been to the movies to see what I presume would be the Universal version of Frankenstein.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, we know what sort of territory we're in early on. There we are, towards the end of the book, Carlos gives us his full demonic vampire lord, long-faced, you know, obviously fang-toothed, with great villainous hair flowing out. It's tremendous stuff from Carlos as ever. You know, I don't know how much many more things we can say about him. He's just magnificent on this sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just every page is just so well done, and yeah, just the amount of detail that he. I was sort of interested to sort of think, okay, I need to go back and have a look at what else he was doing at that time with Strontium Dog and the stainless steel wrap, but I just don't think it would have had this level of sort of detail in a way. Like it's just so dark.
Yeah. Again, what does Dan Abnett say? Filled with chilling menace and perpetual night. That's great stuff. And all the vampire sort of traditions are in there, so crosses and garlic and running water and coffins, plus the fact that they can transform into bats, they can transform into wolves, they can
you've got to stake their heart or chop their head off, they can return from a speck of dust. They're sort of, you know, they're very hard to kill.
They are indeed. Any particular favourite moments or, you know, episodes from this 10-issue story?
Probably the one with the Cossacks. I just like the action of the Cossacks sort of coming. And, yeah, every time every time the Germans look like they're going to be slaughtered by someone, the Romanians sort of come to the rescue, and they're all just like, oh wow, you know, they're really good fighters. But Schmidt sort of knows the truth in that. I like the episode, I guess, with the skis, where Schmidt, he actually picks up the skis and forms the symbol of the cross to keep the vampires back when they're in wolf form. And that's like one of the pictures that was actually in the winter special that I can remember seeing. They had that one and another one that I'll talk about. I think it's the page in episode 6, page, the last page, where it's got the panel and it's got it's Captain Constanta and his troopers and his vampires, you mean. So that were the two panels that they had in this sort of A to Z of combat. So I guess those two episodes, because they really made me sort of get into the story, just those two panels. So those two episodes that contain those panels are probably fairly significant from my point of view.
Yes, you say it's great stuff. I'm looking at the Cossack page where the cavalry riding down from the hills to attack the convoy is great stuff. And of course, the horses are repelled by what's been carried in the back of the truck. And then, as you say, there's a ski chase, ski troopers. It's got it all, isn't it?
Yeah, this pack of wolves that come from nowhere.
I know that some readers were a bit perplexed by a sort of vampire horror story in the pages of the prog back then. But, you know, in terms of a war story with this horror element, it has everything you would want, I'd have thought, back then reading the prog. You know, it's outstanding stuff.
Yeah, well, I can remember as a kid just sort of thinking about... I think they were British books, these little sort of books. They sort of covered vampires and horror and all that sort of stuff. And this sort of story would have been really up my alley. I probably would have been too young to read it in 1980, but yeah, definitely, you know, as probably like a 10 or 12 year old, this would have been right up my alley because it contained everything I loved, which was sort of World War II and then vampires and wolves and things like that. So, yeah, like, what's not to love?
Absolutely. Great stuff. I mean, you've mentioned the Cossacks and the ski troops. I'll mention again the first prog just because, you know, five pages...
It just sets the scene, doesn't it?
It tells you the whole, you know, it tells you exactly, sets the scene, tells you exactly what's going on.
And what's to come.
What's to come. It's great. You know, Jerry Finley Day and Carlos just delivering everything in those first five pages. And you think, I want to read the rest of this story. I want to read more of it.
Yeah, we've got a mystery set up with this diary. And we've got, this environment, this war environment, and then these creatures, and it's just got everything in it, doesn't it? Like, you couldn't do it better.
Yeah, great stuff. So we've mentioned that it's a self-contained story of 10 episodes, but of course, many years later, the Fiends of the Eastern Front came back. So David Bishop and Colin McNeil brought them back in the magazine in 2006. Now I am going to be talking with David Bishop on a later episode about that story. But have you read the sequel story?
I did read it. I haven't read it for this. I must admit I didn't go and dig out my magazines, but I did remember reading it. I think I liked it. Like, you know, it's sort of like when you have like a perfect movie and they make a sequel to it, they're either going to totally stuff it up or do okay. It's hard to top it, sort of thing. And, you know, I don't think they'd ever top this, but yeah, I, you know, because of Colin McNeil's art, I can remember it being good and that. But yeah, I must admit I didn't go and dig it out. I thought I actually might have bought the collection that had both stories in it, but I looked through my bookshelf and I didn't have it. So I just got my hard copy out and read this one. So
okay.
And didn't David Bishop do a prose book as well?
He's written three or four novels based on The Fiends of the Eastern Front.
Okay.
Which, again, I'll be asking him about shortly.
Have you read any of those or not?
I'm reading the first one at the moment, which is sort of retelling this story in prose form.
Okay.
So I'm reading that at the moment for when I interview him again shortly.
Yep, okay.
And as I say, I've read Stalingrad, the sequel by Bishop and McNeil,
yep,
which is included in the digital version of this, of Fiends of the Eastern Front, but not in the hardback, as you say, that we've been looking at. And what a pity that hardback's no longer available, because it's gorgeous.
Well, it's definitely worth tracking down.
Yes, that's right. Yes, eBay. Who knows how many of the libraries got rid of their copies.
That's right.
Okay, Glenn, I mean, you know, a great story, a brilliant one and done from the early days of the prog. As I've said, you know, many a time, it's just got everything you could possibly need. Great work writing by Jerry Finley Day, a lovely mystery to be solved, and then Carlos doing an army of the night, an army of the darkness in a war story with all these different theatres of war that you've mentioned. I can't get over how brilliant it is as a, you know, perfectly formed little horror film or horror story from the early days.
Yeah, and I picked it up this morning and reread it, and it just moves. It just doesn't let up. It just the whole thing just flows nicely, and it's just a nice one and done.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, it's probably one of the quickest reads we've done for the podcast. Like yourself, I took it down and reread it last night, and you can read it in one sitting. And it, as you say, it just flies along. It's a great story for that sort of thing.
Mm.
Okay. Shall we play Grail Pages? If you could pick one page. And of course, there was one prog cover. It appeared on the cover of Prog 158.
Yeah.
The famous, you know, gag, no, please, at least wait till I've read this week's prog.
Yeah, is that breaking the fourth wall? Would that be considered? Or it's sort of,
I think it probably would, yes.
Yeah, out of the context of the story entirely. Well, yeah, other than a Grail cover, which is the only cover there is, I'd love that, but I think we talked about it before. It's in that first episode with the swirling arrival of the shadows when Schmidt's caught in the barbed wire and the fiends turn up and take care of the Russians. That's probably my Grail page there. So that's page three of episode one, I'd say. After looking through it, that's just so atmospheric and yeah, even though we don't get a nice clear shot of Constanta and his fiends, they're just blowing in on the wind and taking care of the Ruskies.
Brilliant. I mean, I think you and I had similar tastes when we did Song of the Surfer in terms of pages, because I would pick exactly that page that you've chosen.
Yeah.
Which is page three, as you say, from the first episode. You know, the wonderful swirling wind as these ghostly, you know, fiendish cloaked shapes appear around the Russian troops. And I'd want the page with the, obviously, with the speech bubbles.
With the letters, it's got, yeah. And the credit card.
Yeah, you've got the 2008 credit card on it with, you know, G. Finley Day, Ascara, Jack Potter, Compu 73E. So, yes. Okay, so I tell you what, I will grant you that one in the virtual art gallery, which you can now find on the Facebook page. We'll also give you the cover to Prog 158.
Yep.
And I might take the cover to the actual hardback itself.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? It looks very digitally coloured.
Yes.
With the hair and everything, sort of. It's sort of that period of where Carlos was sort of yeah, doing yeah. a lot more digitally sort of thing. His stuff now looks a bit more painterly than what it does here.
Yes, I think so. And a lovely sort of, you know, half and half image of the sort of black and white or stunning sort of blue tone. And then, as you say, the digitally coloured painted image of Constanza's horrific face glaring out at us from the cover.
Mm.
So, yeah,
so
great
just,
stuff.
Just talking about this art, is any of this sort of turn up anywhere? Have you seen it? Because I've never seen anyone sort of posting it online or anything like that. Like, I guess what there's 50 pages or whatever it is, so
yeah, probably even less. I've never seen a Fiends page turn up in the sales since I've been, you know, looking. I dare say, you know, somebody must own it out there, hopefully.
It was probably one of those ones that turned up at like an art show for like sort of £5 a page or something ridiculous in the 80s that, you know, someone's probably snagged the whole lot and it's sitting somewhere in a collection, hopefully.
Let's hope an art lover has got all of this somewhere and that it's preserved for posterity. And who knows, we might find it on the Comic Art Fans Gallery if we look for it, or somebody might post it on one of the Facebook groups. But I don't remember pages being posted on the two 2000 AD original art groups that I'm in on Facebook.
But, no, like there's sort of, you see Carlos's Astronomium Dog pages, early ones of those, but not from that really early period, but yeah, sort of ones. But yeah, you've never seen anything like this. Actually, it's interesting, the reproduction on this artwork, every page looks really good except for the very last page in this hardcover. It sort of looks a bit less than crisp sort of thing.
Yes.
So I'm sort of wondering whether they didn't have like a good copy of the final page on film, or however they reproduced this one, or yeah, because otherwise it's very, very nicely sort of, you know, crystal clear. But that's the only one that seems to have like a bit of a fuzziness to some of the lettering and the pictures themselves.
Yes, and as ever, you know, whether this was from original art or original films or scans from pages, we don't know, because that whole subject of, you know, reproducing the early stuff, of course, fraught with difficulties for the people at 2000 AD in Rebellion.
Mm, yeah.
Okay, so we've mentioned this 2006 hardback. There was a 2010 paperback version, which I think had the sequel story Stalingrad in it, but they're both out of print. But you can, of course, buy the digital version from 2000 AD, which I've got as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's $7.99 currently on the 2000 AD store, and that includes, as I say, the sequel story Stalingrad by Bishop and McNeil. This hardback we've got, as we've mentioned a couple of times, Dan Abnett introduction and a black and white reproduction of the cover to 158. But that's basically it in terms of extras.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in terms of a lovely, slim hardback with a perfect story in it, it's great. So if you can track down, as you say, Glenn, that there are copies out there.
Yeah. No, they come up on eBay. Like I didn't pay too much for this as well. Like, so it was, yeah, I snapped it up.
Splendid. And like I say, I will be talking with David Bishop about Stalingrad shortly, and about also his novel versions of Fiends of the Eastern Front.
Excellent.
Anything else you wanted to mention about this story or this particular collection before we finish up, Glenn?
I hope it goes into the 2000 AD Mega Collection, or whatever it's going to be called, from Hachette. And, yeah, maybe that'll allow people to see it, because it's definitely worth having a look at.
Yeah, I just wonder about the story size or where they'd fit this in. They'll have to bundle it with some other stories, I presume, to make a Hachette volume.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it would go, you know, if you stuck this with the VCs, whether that would make a volume, or whether you'd find some other horror stories to team it up with. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see, you know, what titles are coming out from the Ultimate Collection. I have subscribed and I've got my first volumes and my first free gifts. Presumably it'll be a little bit longer before it reaches you in Australia.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully in 2018, they said, so.
Oh, great. Okay. I mean, again, it keeps that lovely sort of hardbound and glossy format from the Judge Dredd Mega Collection. But with more, you know, this time they've done more colourful colours on the covers. The Mega Collection stuck to that very sort of, I think, very artistic, very stylized black and white with touches of red.
Touches of red, covers. Yeah, yep.
Yeah. Okay, great stuff. Anything else you wanted to mention before we finish up?
No, it's just been a pleasure once again. We should do it next year.
Well, we were exactly that. We should do this again next year. So I don't know if you've got any thoughts about what book you might come back with next year.
I think I'd like to do Harry 20 on the High Rock, another Jerry Finley Day story, if I could.
Oh, that's right. I think you'd already bagsy that one. I do have you down for that one, Glenn. So we'll be back same time next year talking about Harry 20 on the High Rock.
Another self-contained story of Jerry's.
Yeah.
This time with Alan Davis on art.
Another superlative artist.
Yeah.
What can we say? So I look forward to talking about that this time next year.
Excellent.
And as I say, thanks for picking Fiends of the Eastern Front. What a great story. If you've never read it, track it down. And if you haven't read it for a while, open up your copy again, because it really rewards reading again and again.
Definitely, yeah. It's like an old, comfortable pair of shoes that you slip on, and it's just so well done. It's just, yeah, it's great stuff.
Brilliant. And thank you to everybody for listening to Mega City Book Club. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favourite podcatcher. And if you like what we do, please tell your friends. And if you don't like it, please tell me. And I'll see if I can fix it. Find all the books that we've chosen so far and that are coming up in the next year on the Facebook page. Follow on Twitter at MCBC Podcast and email me comments and suggestions to mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, you'll find all the links and episodes at megacitybookclub.com. Thanks to Robo Dub for the title music. Thanks to Brian from the British Invaders Science Fiction Podcast for hosting the episodes and for his audio expertise. And that will do it. So until next time on Mega City Book Club, when we're passing judgment on another fine 2000 AD book, it's goodbye time. So goodbye from me, and
it's goodbye from him. Why?